on to the last case of the morning. Everybody get settled here. Yang versus YWCA. And you're Mr. Lasker.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court. I am David Lasker from Madison, Wisconsin. Privileged this morning to be here to represent a humble man who worked as a custodian at the YWCA for 8 years before his employment was summarily terminated on a certain day in 2002. This case raises the question of whether there are genuine issues of material fact, and with all due respect, the district court erroneously failed to see that there are tremendous issues of fact. In the brief of the appellant, there's 25 pages of facts with specific citations to specific paragraphs of specific affidavits that show that Mr. Yang was terminated, at least in part, by the motivation of him being a Hmong man. There's no question.
I don't know where that is.
Pardon?
You have to help me find where that motivation is present.
It's most present, Your Honor, in the affidavit of Mark Peterson, who was his supervisor. It's in the record as Record 32. And Mr. Peterson had worked at the YWCA for 13 years by the time Yang was fired, and he was his direct supervisor, and
But he wasn't the decision maker.
He wasn't the decision maker. He was present when the decision was made, which he believed was an improper decision, and which he believed was motivated by the way Ms. Merchart handled the whole thing. The lawyer for the YWCA was recommending that there be some step kind of action taken, a suspension or something of the sort, and she would not hear of that. She insisted upon firing him. The record shows from the affidavits of Mr. Yang and co-workers, and most importantly Mr. Peterson, that Yang was subjected to hyper-scrutiny and written reports about him that were not done to any other employee in the place. There is a lot of evidence that that the person who did fire him had a different demeanor and a different way of treating Mr. Yang and the other two Southeast Asian employees there. And that evidence comes from Mr. Peterson, who saw it and reports it in his affidavit in detail, and from Mr. Yang himself, who talks about experiencing the decision maker having treated him noticeably differently when she was around other people than she would when she was alone with him, and that she would be abusive and angry toward him when she was one-on-one. The day that she terminated his employment, she was irrational in anger and physically abused him. And that's so out of proportion to the incident that it's some further evidence.
Yeah, tell us, how serious is the entry into the living area of someone at the YWCA without permission?
Yes.
After previous incidents where he was told not to do that.
Yes, and he did not, but he did not enter the room. What he did, he was there with a locksmith that was costing the YWCA some serious money, and he had been to this room on numerous occasions, been told to go away, and did go away. On this day, he said, we don't want to come in the room. I'm here with a locksmith. This is set forth in his affidavit and the affidavit of two other people that were with him on this occasion. And he said, we're just trying to see whether the lock works or not. The question was whether the problem was with the key or the lock. And Mr. Yang put the key in and turned it, and the door came ajar, literally a crack open. And from that point, the tenant grabbed the door open and started yelling at him and causing a big fuss. But the decision maker never on this occasion or on any of the previous occasions when it was alleged that he'd done something wrong ever tried to find out what actually happened. And that's another thing that I think is ends up being evidence of pretext. The evidence as a whole really does strongly imply that she was looking for she grabbed this incident as the means to get rid of him, as the pretext for firing him. And there's absolutely no question that the evidence is there to support that. Now, the standard, of course, is that we show that it... I'm looking to the Sheen case, for example, in 1999. All that's required is that the jury be not be required to accept the defendant's explanation for its actions. And the Servetus case and the Courtney case, the plaintiff need only produce enough evidence from which a rational fact finder could infer the company's preferred reasons were pretextual.
So what is the best piece of evidence that you have to point to that the action was unfavorable action of termination was taken because your client is Asian?
The most significant piece of evidence is the affidavit of the supervisor who said that the firing was unwarranted, it was unprecedented, it was done without following the rules.
Yeah, but what is that? That may all be.
Well, there is no other
decision to fire somebody. But is it because they were that he was Asian?
Yes, she had remarked about the fact that she had remarked to Peterson at the very beginning that the fact that he was Asian, that he seemed to have a United Nations of employees in the department, and that was in the face of talking about his special effort to bring in some immigrant employees where it was possible to do that. The evidence has to be looked at as a whole in order to see that she had a predisposition to treat the Southeast Asian employees differently than the other employees in terms of procedures and the degree to which she would discipline them rather than others. Mr. Yang was the only person who was disciplined ever for the incident having to do with going into a tenant's room, and he was there for 8 years, and Mr. Peterson there for 13 years, and Ms. Merchart there for only 4 years, but during that period of time, employees went into the room mistakenly on numerous occasions, as Mr. Peterson shows in his affidavit, and never got disciplined in any way, much less with suspensions or terminations. So I would just say that if you read the 25 pages of the Statement of Facts, Your Honor, there is enough evidence there that my client deserves his day in court and an opportunity to prove that he was discriminated against unfairly when his employment was terminated. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay, fine. Mr. Erke?
May it please the court. I think it's important, first of all, for me to highlight and emphasize that we are dealing with an entity, the Young Women's Christian Association, that provides secure housing for single mothers and women of low income. I emphasize secure because counsel is throwing some cloudy issues out about pretext and unjustified termination. And yet, we have a situation here where facts are unquestioned, where this maintenance worker may have done okay for 6 or 7 years. The case law of this circuit says we look at the transaction and the discipline in question. A good employee 6 years ago does not make a good employee today when he goes into a single woman's room while she's laying in bed after she has asked him not to do that. The facts that are important, particularly, Justice Evans, with regard to your question, we've got two incidents in the year and a half to two before this where the management people do in fact have a good faith belief that he is either resting or sleeping in tenants' quarters where he's not supposed to be. He finally in the record indicates that he was seeking solitude in the quiet of those rooms when he was discovered. It's important to note where these complaints and these facts come from. This is not Eileen Merschart, the executive director, starting in early 2001 saying, how can I put something together to get rid of this Hmong maintenance man, when, by the way, I have a staff of 4 East Asians, and if I make a comment to a supervisor that you've got the United Nations, what's interesting that's been left out is there's no indication other than that was complimentary, and it certainly wasn't any type of direct evidence of racial or national origin animus. And it never came up. Mr. Yang himself admits in his testimony that there was never a racially or national origin motivated statement made to him at any time under any circumstances. So we have the executive director walking through with a banker who may be providing financing, and they find him in a position that looks like he may have been sleeping. There's some question about that. Then the Third Street coordinator who handles the rooming for the women with children finds him on another occasion. She's going in to see how a painting project is going, and he's getting up off the couch. In her mind, in January of 2002, she believes he was resting or sleeping. Good faith belief, and she writes it up. That's January. About the same time, we now have another individual providing facts, an unrelated, non-employed tenant by the name of Onyx O'Brien. He knocks on her door and says, I'm from maintenance. I need to do some work in your apartment. She goes, just a minute. Don't open the door. I'm not dressed. He opens the door and walks in, and she's standing there in a towel. She reports it. It goes to the Third Street coordinator. It goes to the executive director. They determine that a suspension is appropriate for 1 day. That suspension is passed on by Mr. Peterson, the supervisor. That is after this tenant asked him not to open the door and not to come in. Then, in April, we have an incident where he is at the door and he is knocking. Now, keep in mind, he's testified twice, one in an unemployment compensation hearing and once in a deposition, that he knows if a woman tenant says, do not open that door, I am not to open that door, and he acknowledges that. Yet this woman, on 3 separate occasions that day, when he's standing there with witnesses, he knocks, he identifies himself, she says, go away, I'm sleeping. He says, we've got to do this now, the locksmith's here. She says, go away, I'm sleeping. He disregards her completely and opens the door. Judge Evans, he did step in by opening the door. That's enough. That has violated this woman's right to privacy. And if there's some question about pretext or a false reason for firing him, this woman goes screaming down. She calls down. She calls the desk. She insists on talking to the executive director. The executive director goes up. This woman threatens to sue them. She does call the police. She calls the Madison Tenant Resource Center to complain about how the YWCA is treating her because the maintenance man came in and violated her privacy, and she threatens to get a lawyer. This is not pretextual that the executive director somehow put together hoping to get rid of this employee. So the director talks to her. She goes up there and she gets the story. Contrary to what counsel represented to you, she talks to Mr. Yang. Yes, she was angry, and he's the only one that's ever done this. And she takes him in and says, what are you thinking? And he's got no excuse. So she talks to the co-worker, by the way, an East Asian. He's not disciplined because he's not the one that violated the woman's rights. She meets with her staff, including Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson agrees not only with the termination, but he relays the termination to Mr. Yang that next day and says nothing about objecting. Interestingly enough, somewhere after the fact, he comes up with an affidavit. Counsel indicates it's the most important one. Well, does that raise the question of fact? With all due respect, you'll see in the record that he was subpoenaed.
Judge Shabazz denied our motion to strike his affidavit, but appropriately said, I'm only going to look at what's not speculation, what's not opinion, and what is based on fact. And Judge Shabazz looked at that and found that there was nothing to it. There was
Didn't he show up for that response?
I can only speculate, Judge, because I believe I would have shown further with cross-examination.
The record doesn't tell us.
No. We can speculate why he didn't show up, but you don't need to hear me say that. The bottom line is they agree to terminate him. Mark Pearson goes down and terminates him. Then none of this is questioned during the process. And then after the fact, he's terminated, and I'm not sure where he got his advice or whether it's relevant here. But then the concept of this must have been because I'm among men comes up. We are not even at the point where there's any direct evidence. I submit to you, we have to look at what was said and done in the specific decision. So even if Eileen Merchant had made a comment about having the United Nations of Maintenance staff, and probably in a complimentary fashion, this is months if not years before this, we're looking at what was said and done that day. Yes, she's angry. Yes, she grabs him and pulls him into her office and says, what are you thinking? She gets either no story from him or he tries to explain it. She makes a reasoned decision then to talk to the tenants, the witnesses, and instead of just going off at the hip and firing, she meets with her staff. They call their lawyer. Now, whether or not the lawyer provided a recommendation is not clear in the record, I submit. But we all have been in the situation where we may or may not have recommendations, and our clients don't follow them. But she and the management staff decided to terminate, and that was passed on. They looked at whether they were exposed to liability, could be exposed to liability in the future, and there's more than overwhelming evidence as to the justification for the final decision. What now they are asking you to do, even if you accept that her lawyer said maybe you want to do something in a progressive system, they've already been through a written warning and a suspension with this gentleman, similar to the Peters case that came out of the circuit in 2002. He had three incidents, and they sat down and in a reasoned meeting made the decision to terminate. This is not Eileen Merchart running up to him and saying, you are gone. That's not what happened here. And so there's not even any direct evidence. Then he failed completely on two of the four items needed for the prima facie case. He makes a generalization, and this is what Judge Shabazz addressed in the affidavit of Mark Pearson. He says other people went into rooms by mistake, and there's the big distinguishing factor. If that happened, keep in mind there's no identification of when, where, how, or whether there were complaints, or who these people were, other than the generalized statement. Had Mr. Pearson come to his deposition, we may have determined that there were none. In fact, this affidavit isn't enough to raise the question of fact. And so we have a situation where on the similarly situated issue, there are no similarly situated employees. The law requires that it has to be based on performance and conduct by others. And the language here says, without distinguishing or mitigating circumstances that would distinguish those individuals from Mr. Yang. And that's not here. There's no evidence in this record to say other than they may have walked in by mistake. Judge Shabazz addressed that. He said, no one made that mistake. And now they come and ask you to question the decision of the business that they made to fire. And they're asking you to sit as the personnel review board of the YWCA and say, you, director, managers, lawyer, made the wrong decision. Now we need to change that. And that's not true. The other are appropriate. The other thing is, along with similar situation, reasonable expectations, you have to look at based on the law what's going on at the time. It's clear that resting in rooms, going into tenants' quarters in this facility does not meet the reasonable expectation. I do not believe, with all due respect, that it even gets to the point of the burden shifting. There is a legitimate non-discriminatory reason, and then bring us back to pretext. But pretext has to be a lie, phony, no factual basis, and improper. And there is nothing in this record that could even come close to supporting that this was a lie. Otherwise, why do we have four different individuals involved, two not even employers? And why do we meet, and why do we go through the progressive discipline? If it was one person, one time, with some direct evidence, maybe it goes to a jury, but there's no evidence here to take to a jury. No reasonable jury could sustain any type of verdict. So I'd ask that you affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment, and I thank you.
Okay.
Everything that Mr. Erke just said is contested by the evidence put in by Yang. Everything. Whether those incidents were real, whether they were trumped up, and so forth. The thing that concerns me is that this case was really tried by the district court on the basis of the affidavits, and obviously the court made credibility determinations. And I think this case is important because I believe that the court has to remind the lower courts that the question isn't whether this case is worthy of being tried in your courtroom. The question is whether there is a cause of action with regard to which there are genuine issues of fact, and this case has it all. Mr. Peterson didn't show up because he was a truck driver who had to be somewhere else in Illinois or Missouri and offered to reschedule his deposition, but counsel was not willing to do that. Those four East Asians that he referred to are gone. Mr. Peterson is gone. And that's all since Ms. Merschart came aboard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. That completes the arguments for the day. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.